All right. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Wednesday, June 1st of 2022. Happy June, everybody out there. Thanks for tuning into the stream here today. If this is your first time watching our show or listening to our show on the podcast version, Office Hours is an open Q&A style show where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS, whatever you guys want to talk about. I guess I should say, for those of you that don't already know me, my name is Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. And if you have questions for the show, there's a couple different good ways to ask them. You can always email us, support@sabersim.com. You can ask your questions live in the YouTube chat. And you can ask questions either live or any other time throughout the day in the Office Hours channel in Slack. And if you're not already joined up in Slack, there's a link to join in the description of every past show. I know some of you probably are tuning in here today expecting to see our contest selection stream. That is still coming. We needed to put some final touches on that. We've really worked hard on this the past couple weeks and really don't want to kind of rush the final product out of the gate here. So wanted to spend a couple more days on that, planning on doing that stream either tomorrow or Friday. I'm a little up in the air there. Just want to make sure we're all dialed in there. So we have normal office hours here today. I apologize for those that are excited. I know there was a lot of excitement in the Slack channel this morning about the show. But you've got me here today anyway. But because I gave everybody a bit of a false start yesterday on stream, I mentioned that we'd be doing that today. I don't have any questions in my queue here for office hours today. So if you have questions for me, feel free to fire away. And we'll answer questions in the order that they come in here as we go along. I did think it would be a good opportunity to take advantage of a show where we open with no questions in the queue to do kind of a walkthrough of a build or maybe even a process for tonight's slate. We had talked a couple weeks ago about the idea of doing a little bit more slate-specific content. I don't know exactly what that might look like in the future, but I did think today, since we don't have anything else really going on, it might be an interesting kind of experiment to do that with. I also think, you know, conveniently, I haven't looked at the slate at all here tonight yet. So we have an 8-game MLB slate here tonight. Apart from what I'm looking at right now, I've not studied this slate. I have not really looked at anything. I thought it would be kind of fun as a way to start this show off of me essentially just doing a stream of consciousness here, building some lineups and kind of, you know, familiarizing myself with the slate, seeing what some of that initial research and some of those builds look like, how I kind of get used to things there. Maybe we'll kind of wrap that up with maybe doing a couple builds for a couple different kinds of contests. Maybe I was thinking, you know, we could do something like a smaller field, single entry or three max kind of approach. Maybe a larger field, 150 max. And then maybe we kind of find a highly leveraged like qualifier or satellite kind of build here. So I'm going to start there. Again, we've got an hour or so here, so I think we'll be able to get to questions as they come in as well here. But I'm going to just kind of start. Maybe we'll spend 15, 20 minutes on this, and we'll do this together here. So I'm going to just start talking about kind of the way that I would quickly just start getting familiarized with the slate. A lot of times I like to look at pitchers first and get an idea, and sometimes I'll sort by salary instead here and just kind of get familiar with what the popular pitchers are going to be and what the popular pitching constructions are going to be. So I'm actually going to sort by projected here. It's a slate again here tonight where I think we're probably going to be maybe a little bit more spread out at pitcher. We don't have that big top elite ace or set of elite aces up at the top end that I think are going to get a ton of ownership or deserve a ton of ownership. We have Cortez here that I think is probably going to be the most popular guy. I agree with that overall here. Then a handful of other plays up at the higher range that I think are going to be, you know, somewhat chalky. And then a couple of elite, or I don't even want to say elite, but like the go-to value plays, right? You've got John Gray, who's been playing pretty well recently in a friendly pitcher's ballpark against the Rays. Whitlock against a somewhat bad hitting team in the Reds there, you know, some of these value plays. I think the popular constructions here, by far the most popular construction is going to be Cortez with Gray and Whitlock and Springs as the value play. I think people will mix in Ray and Skuball here. I think sorting by salary, you are probably going to have this little gap here. Probably basically from the 7.5K Hunter Green all the way up to Michael Kopech at 9K. That's probably just not going to be that popular. Obviously, I kind of feel like I'm explaining the ownership projections here. You guys can obviously all read this for yourself, but this is legitimately kind of how I start to think about how lineups might come together on the pitching side. On the hitting side, at least according to SaberSim here, I think there's going to be kind of the three big stacks up top that will, you know, roughly all be pretty similar in expectation of the Dodgers here, 5.6 runs, Red Sox 5.3, and then maybe to a lesser extent, the Yankees. I think those three teams are really going to be, you know, by far the highest projected teams, also most likely the highest owned teams. I will check on the batter ownership and kind of make sure that is in line with what my expectation is. And that, I think, seems pretty accurate. I think that's a pretty, I think that's likely to be what happens here. I think a couple notes right off the bat, it makes me immediately a little bit interested in a team like Seattle or Toronto. We've got this kind of gap where we've got these three teams, Dodgers, Red Sox, and Yankees, that are all projected as pretty elite hitting plays. And then we have a lot of teams that aren't projected very well at all. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams. Of half of the teams on the slate are projected for less than 4 runs on average, according to the Sims. And then there's also, you know, the Brewers are 4.0. The White Sox are 4.0. A lot of poorly projected teams. So we have these two teams here that I could see kind of getting maybe a little bit overlooked, right? Where, you know, the expectation, and we'll see how this all comes out when we start building lineups, but I think the field is likely to undervalue a team like Seattle or Toronto, who maybe is slightly less projected than some of those elite bats, but still a lot of good bats in those lineups. You'll get way less of the ownership than you will compared to the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers. And you have a team that has not much less of an expectation. Also, I would say, you know, just kind of initial research here, slightly interested in something like an Angels stack. Again, if we have this slate where, you know, there is Cortez up top, there's a 2.5 point projection gap between him and the next best projected pitcher, but I don't think this jumps off the page to me as a particularly great pitching slate. And if the field ends up going in the direction of treating Cortez as by far the best pitcher on the slate, a guy that's deserving of being far more owned than every other pitcher here on the slate, I would say that I kind of become interested in some Angel stacks just right off the bat, because they are equivalent, about the same run total as a lot of these other bottom teams here, but you get this nice direct leverage against the chalkiest pitcher on the slate by rostering them, right? I mean, you can compare, you know, any of these teams, Brewers, Rays, Twins, Tigers, Cubs, to the Angels, right? What do you get, or White Sox even, what do you get by rostering Angels versus 8 of the other teams on the slate, 7 of the other teams on the slate? Well, you get direct leverage against the chalkiest pitcher. So, I mean, a couple things that I'm looking at right off the bat there. And I'll often spend a little bit of time just looking. I don't even need to leave SaberSim here for this particular part. I will just spend some time looking and seeing kind of how the slate breaks down that way. Another thing I think at this point that I would be interested in looking at is that Fantasy Labs dashboard. And this would kind of be the first time I would say I maybe jump away from SaberSim and take a look here and see what we're seeing on the Fantasy Labs dashboard. And I'm mostly just looking here to see if anything tells me a different story, right? This is all based on the Sim data. So this is kind of, you know, consulting Vegas here as a second opinion, a really nice average projection of, you know, what is the field likely to think about this particular slate? And we do get a little bit of a different story told here. So I think Vegas thinks that the slate breaks down a little bit differently, where you have the Dodgers as far and away the best stack. So worth noting that the Dodgers may be actually a little bit more of a chalkier stack overall, then a jump, then the Red Sox, right, as the next best overall stack, then a jump, and then you get Mariners, Yankees, and Blue Jays as kind of all the next tier of teams. So a little bit of a different story than the Sims tell, I think, or at least my first interpretation of the Sims, where we may have this kind of, you know, Dodgers chalk, secondary to that Red Sox chalk, and then this next tier. And then I would expect that almost all any of these other teams on the slate are probably pretty low owned on the stacks. I think it's unlikely that you're going to see any of these other teams be super popular. So I'll also check weather at this point. good time. We did have Coors Field get canceled yesterday. Good time. I like to use the RotoGrinders, Kevin Roth's weather dashboard here. And take a look here. We had the split slate today, so I think this is the first game on the main slate. So just taking a look at the weather concerns here, and I mean, right off the bat, jumps out here. Do have some weather concerns for Angels and Yankees, which makes that game a lot more interesting. Obviously, it's a little bit weird doing this here 5 hours before lock. If this was actually a half hour before lock when I would probably start this process, and this was still yellow orange, I don't know if I would fade this, right? If we had the exact same information we have right now, I don't know if I would full fade this. I would probably still be a little interested in Angel stacks. I might be even less interested in Yankees chalk on the hitting side and Cortez, just because of the weather, right? That's just kind of another reason maybe to be a little bit scared off of the Angels and the Yankees. So cool. So that's all kind of familiarizing myself with the slate. Now I'll go ahead and let's do, I think for this particular, for the next step here, let's run a research build. And the research build here is going to be, I would say, one step further into kind of figuring out what my strategy is going to start to be on this slate. Now that I have some idea of what the slate looks like, I'm going to run 1500 lineups with 0-0-10 sliders, which is going to have the effect of simulating out the slate 1500 times. I'm going to say, give me a random game sim from every game on the slate. Let's get this started so we can actually build this here. Give me a random sim from every game on the slate and build the optimal lineup for that single slate simulation. Do that once, then do that a second time, then do that a third time. Do that 1500 times, and it will basically take advantage of the simulations themselves to give me an idea of what the slate, what the chances of certain players teams and stacks and things like that are of being optimal. And this will give me an opportunity to start to figure out, combined with what I just did here a minute ago, you know, what my strategy might start to look like for this particular slate. Where are there opportunities that I think a player is going to be over or under owned here? Where do I think there's some leverage opportunity? So we'll let this build for a second here, and then we will we'll take a look. So okay. It is around this time too, where I will probably start taking some notes. And just so I don't lose track of anything. So, and let's do pitchers first. So let's jump over to the pitchers, and take a look at this. So I guess, again, I'll kind of just do this stream of consciousness. So interesting here, I is actually, you know, not as much negative leverage on a guy like Cortez as I might have expected. You know, even the sims say there's definitely a jump there where there's a gap where he is the most likely pitcher to be optimal. This ownership at 35% doesn't seem that inefficient. I think if we do get his ownership coming up closer to 40% or something like that by the time slate locks, I do think it gets a little bit more interesting on the fade side. Weather concerns still exist in that game, but I don't know suddenly if I'm as interested in an aggressive fade there. I might be a little bit more willing to play a guy like Cortez, or at least be kind of even with the field there. Also interesting that, you know, Robbie Ray, who I think is probably one of the better pivots, in that kind of salary range and point range, also seems to be going a little bit overowned. Not a lot of more interesting plays there. Very interesting that stands out immediately here is the second most likely to be optimal pitcher on the slate at the moment is John Gray, who actually looks inefficiently underowned by a couple points. So definitely would be looking to get a little bit of John Gray exposure. Let's see if there's any particular plays that jump out as good fades or plays here. I would say for me at the moment with negative 6.8 leverage, right? And what this is saying is that we project Cortez to be negative 6.8 percentage points higher owned than his percent chance to be in the optimal lineup. So I might say something like, you know, Cortez and Ray, I kind of want to be like even with the field, so that I'm not overexposed to a player that I think maybe the field is going to be over gravitating towards, but that's really not too bad in terms of leverage there. I expected that to be worse. I'll also take a look to see if there's any players that I specifically want to get on in terms of pitchers. Not really anything jumping off the board here. Honestly, the ownership looks pretty efficient at pitcher here for tonight's slate. So that's okay. Let's go ahead and look at the batters here and take a look over here and see what we can learn here. So again, let's do this first. So let's look at the most inefficient ownership. Boston and the Dodgers kind of jump right off the page here. I do think it's worth noting, again, based on our research from Vegas, that I think while SaberSim assumes these teams are probably a little bit closer together, I think the field is really going to see a clear winner in the Dodgers and then secondary chalk on the Red Sox there. So I am probably interested in taking a pretty aggressive stand against Dodgers tonight, especially knowing that I might not be able to get any ownership leverage on the pitching side of the slate. So I'm interested in a Dodgers fade. I'm interested in a Boston fade as well, maybe a little bit to a lesser extent. Let's see if I can find any other teams here that project well on the other side. Actually, let's do it like this. So let's look at our top most likely hitters to be in the optimal lineup that aren't significant negative leverage. I do actually think the Yankees are kind of interesting here. Again, I know we have the weather concerns in that game here, but the Sims clearly like the Yankees, right? I assumed they were going to be a particularly chalky team, and I don't know if Vegas, like, I think all three of these teams become kind of interesting. Seattle, Toronto, and the Yankees as teams that project pretty well. It's likely that I think they're just going to be a little bit under less owned compared to these top two teams. So I might suddenly be interested in those teams. You can see popping up here some Yankees bats, Twins, maybe a little bit interesting, but also, you know, we've got Toronto, we've got Seattle kind of leaking in here. So might be an interesting angle on the hitting side here tonight to get some exposure to the Yankees, Toronto, and Seattle. And I would still be careful with that weather and that Angels game, but maybe I want some exposure to those particular stacks. And then let's see if there's any teams that really jump off the board here as a, like a big leverage play here. And I think that's still probably, I think still probably the Angels are a little bit interesting there. I might be a little bit excited about Baltimore as well. Especially, you almost get an opportunity to kind of double fade those two chalky pitchers. And I'm not talking about going overboard here with Baltimore or Angel stacks, but in the large field stuff, the 150 max kind of stuff, if I'm going to be even with the field on Cortez and Ray, I probably want to get a little bit of exposure to Baltimore and LA here. So, cool. Okay. So that I would say that's kind of like where my research build takes me. Now I'll run a test build and let's use default settings here. And let's do this for a 150 max first, because I think that's kind of the easiest one. So we'll do 150 max. All I'm going to do here, the only thing I'm going to change is I'm going to build a pool size of 1500 because I want extra lineups to edit my exposures with here. I'm not going to touch much else here, and I'm going to start a build. And then we'll talk about how I will start applying what I've basically learned in this research process to a 150 max. We'll kind of finalize, we'll do a 150 max build. Then I think it'd be interesting to do a single entry kind of three max type build. And then maybe we'll do like a high leverage qualifier or satellite kind of build or something like that. Cool. I see a couple questions trickling in here in both office hours and in the YouTube chat here. So we will get to those here in a bit. I'm going to continue going down this path here, maybe for another 10 minutes or so, and then we'll answer some questions. Give this build just a moment to wrap up here. Okay. So let's go ahead and start taking a look at this here. So right off the bat, let's look at pitchers again. Let's start here. So ton of exposure to Cortez, right? I still don't know if I'm totally bought in there based on the research here. I think this is a lot of exposure to a player that I think is at best going to be kind of efficiently owned. I'm already interested a little bit in Angel stacks. We have the weather concerns. I think as a starting point, I'm going to go ahead and just cap his exposure at the field ownership, right? So what I'm saying here is I'm in a sense not taking a stance here, right? I'm basically saying, you know, I want to be even with the field. I don't want Cortez to kill me if he goes off. I don't want leverage. I don't want positive leverage there. I don't want to take a stand there. That's going to be my spot. I'm going to go ahead and set Ray to 25% as well, just because I know that was a guy I also wanted to be about even with the field on, even though he's already at 22.7. Sometimes I'll set that max exposure there just so that doesn't, you know, as I'm setting other exposures throughout the process, if I know I want max 25 there, I don't want to adjust exposure on my hitters and then end up with more Robbie Ray because that max exposure wasn't there, right? So interested in that. We are getting to quite a bit of John Gray, which was a guy that I was interested in based on the research build, right? Most likely, according to the Sims as they are right now, second most likely pitcher to be in the optimal lineup and inefficiently under-owned. That is always always kind of jumps out to me of a guy I want to get some exposure to if I think, you know, he's one of the best plays on the slate and the field doesn't really seem to realize it. So definitely interested in there. I do think Skuball is an interesting play here as well. A high price point where, you know, he's 10-2, very similar to Cortez. Very few people are going to play him compared to Cortez. And, you know, playing another team that has a similar total, right? Angels and Twins, right? Like, you know, implied totals are not everything, but I wouldn't say that the Angels and the Twins to jump off the page is having significantly different expectations on the slate here tonight. Skubal has strikeout upside as well. I think that's just a very good place. I like the idea of exposure going there at the expense of Cortez lineups. I think one interesting point to make here too, while I'm on this, is that I won't, especially if I only have so much time, I'm not going to have a stance on every single player in the slate, right? Like, you can see I kind of picked a few spots here. I had a few names that I was looking for. I have a few ideas of where I want to go and what I want to do. But it's not as if I have something, you know, unique or clever or sophisticated to say about every pitcher on the slate here. I'm letting SaberSim handle a lot of this. I just have a few spots. I want to add some value by making some adjustments. So let's go ahead. I think actually one other thing I'll do first is I'll go over and check my stacks. Before I start editing batting exposures, I kind of want to make sure that my stacks are in line. Personally, for an 8-game slate here tonight, I'm probably going to want at least a 4-stack in every lineup. I think there's an argument to be made for things like these 3-3-2 stacks where, you know, the entire lineup is correlated in that case. But 8-game slate, I think it's enough games where I want to shoot for one of those teams having a high upside outcome. So I will probably do a little bit of stack cleanup here. And just eliminate lineups that don't have at least a 4-stack. So I'm just setting max exposures to these to 0. And just forcing those constructions I like. Would have been very easy as well and probably better practice for me to just set a stacking rule here to begin with, to say at least 4 players from the same team. I would have had a better pool of lineups for what I was trying to do. So anyway. I've got my stacks here. So that feels pretty good. I'm not very opinionated above and beyond that of how these teams get stacked, right? You know, or what constructions I have more exposure to or less exposure to. I'll probably roll with what I get there by default, but I do want to make sure I have those big stacks. So now let's go to team stacks next and just see what we're getting here. So, okay. Holy smokes, right? Seattle, Baltimore. Wow. LA, right? We are getting exposure to those teams. They were on my list. That's a lot of exposure. I don't know if I need that much exposure, but I do like right off the bat that I'm kind of getting the direction that I'm looking for there. The Dodgers still showing up here a little bit. Boston still showing up here a little bit, but definitely on the lower side of that. These actually look pretty good here to me. I might do a couple things. So first of all, I am more interested in baseball in fades than like plays, than stands, right? And the main reason why is because I think it is easier to be right when you think about it that way, right? Like the Dodgers probably have, you know, even if they are the best overall team on the slate here, they've probably got what, maybe at max a 10 or 15% chance at being the best overall stack on the slate. Right. So by fading the Dodgers, you're taking the other side of that. You're saying, you know, I'm going to bet that the Dodgers are not one of the best one or best two best teams on the slate. Right. But when you get 30% exposure or 53% exposure to Seattle stacks, right, you're taking a really aggressive stand the other direction. You're saying, I'm going to bet on this singular team. I want to maximize my outcome when this singular team is the best overall team on the slate. So I often like to, I'm willing to take strong stands on fades. I don't want to take as aggressive of stands on the teams I'm targeting, if that makes sense, just because of the way that those probabilities work. So because I don't have a strong stance at pitcher tonight, I think I really want to take an aggressive stand on the hitting, especially in 150 lineups. I might do something like a really aggressive no Dodgers, no Boston stacks tonight. We were already going that direction. I might take it all the way there and really make an aggressive stand on those teams. Again, especially because I don't really feel like I had an ownership-based stance to make on the pitching side. That's going to consolidate my stacks down a little bit here. I want to kind of cool down some of this exposure to some of the stack exposure, but I'm going to start doing it on the individual batter level and see where I end up with all my stacks on the other side. So we click on JP Crawford. I have 45% exposure to him at the moment. If we look at his distributions, his most common outcome is 0 points. It happens about 20% of the time. He scores less than five, probably about half the time, right? This is true of most batters on a slate. 150 lineups, I probably only want about 30% max to a batter. I will probably go in here and just cool down. And you can see because your lineups are correlated already, it's very easy to just bring down your exposure to a bunch of players all at once by setting a max exposure to one player of 30%. So that smooths out my batter exposure significantly. I'm not overly exposed to any one hitter on the slate now. And now let's look, right? Now I'm getting 37%, 36% Baltimore, Seattle. Some of the other teams that jumped out when I was doing my research too are Toronto. And what were the other teams? Seattle, Toronto, and New York. I could see myself maybe wanting to get a little bit more exposure to New York. I might bump them up just because, again, I think SaberSim at the moment is assuming that this team is going to be chalkier than they are. And I don't think they are going to be, again, kind of looking at this, right? I think they're going to be treated as that next tier. I don't think they're going to be super chalk here. I want to make sure I'm getting some exposure to that Seattle, New York, and I think Toronto too. I think those teams are just interesting here tonight in that kind of second tier. So I like this now, right? I mean, we can look at my stacks, right? So I'm getting my top five stacks are basically direct leverages against two chalky pitchers that I'm not super excited about, right? LA and Baltimore. And then the three teams that are basically the next best tier after the two teams that I think the field is going to be overowning, right? So I'm basically saying, you know, give me, you know, along with a variety of other combinations of different stacks here, but these are kind of my stance, right? You know, let me take some shots on some stacks where I'm, you know, fading chalk pitching, right? And then also getting exposure to just other decently projected teams that I think are going to be underowned. And I may do one kind of final swoop here and see how things are looking, see what my exposures are to different players, to different people on the slate here. But this is looking pretty good. This kind of would like probably work as my 150 max build here. So let's do a single entry build because I think it's interesting here to take it from that standpoint here and talk about how I might differentiate. So let's do a single entry lineup. Let's say I'm just building a single bullet, maybe about 5,000 entrants in the contest, something like that. Actually, you know what? Let's say I'm playing something maybe a little bit a higher dollar, right? So we'll do something like this instead. And let's build 500 lineups and talk about this. So in single entry, right, the sliders are going to do some of this for you automatically. But I'm not as interested in taking as aggressive of a stand. Right. I don't need the ownership fade slider comes down. The variance slider comes down. All right. I probably still want to be somewhat opinionated here. I still want to do something that's kind of unique to what my research led me to do. But I don't need to be as aggressive with that ownership, as aggressive with that variance. I can embrace some of the better overall plays. And what I've talked about a lot before on this stream of how I actually go about doing this here is I will eliminate lineups until I'm kind of satisfied with what's left. So let's see the lineup here. Let's make an adjustment. And basically I'm going to look at these and eliminate lineups that I don't want to play until I like the remaining lineup. So I actually think this is actually a pretty decent lineup right off the bat here. But let's say, for example, that, you know, I want to just experiment and see like, what does fading Cortez look like in a single entry lineup tonight? And I get down to the rank 19th lineup, which isn't actually too bad here, and have a decent looking lineup here. Let's say, what if I want to experiment with the idea of fading both Ray and Cortez, right? That might be a little aggressive. Okay, it actually isn't, right? And when I'm saying it actually isn't, right? What I'm saying is that I don't have to sacrifice too many lineups to get to the first no Ray, no Cortez lineup, right? And now I have an interesting lineup here. Rank 21 out of my pool of 500. It has a five stack. I like that here. Neither of those two chalky pitchers, right? Kind of an interesting lineup, right? So I might be interested in playing this. This might be, you know, the one. If I was playing three lineups, I'd do this for three different lineups. Let's take a different approach here from the start and say, let's say instead of taking the approach of fading Cortez, let's say I want to experiment with, trying to think. This lineup like looks too good for what I expected. Let's eliminate this and say I want to play a more correlated lineup, right? And I want to get a five stack in there or a 4-4, right? Okay. And now let's go. So now let's say I want to eliminate Boston, right? I think that's one of my favorite fades on the hitting side of the slate is to fade the Boston stack, right? And let's say I don't want to play a Dodger stack either, even a two stack, right? I'm kind of just going down and eliminating lineups here, right? And then we arrive at a different lineup. So this time I'm going to play Cortez. But Seattle, I think, is an interesting team. We get a little bit of a Yankee stack in there as well, 5-2 stack, something like this, right? So I'm still applying what I learned from my research build process, et cetera. I just don't need to do as much, right? All I'm doing is trying to end up on a single lineup here. So that might be a little bit what I was doing if I was doing a single entry lineup here. Let's do one more just for fun because I don't do this very often. And let's do a satellite or like a qualifier. So let's say I'm throwing a single bullet in, not to say that this is the best place to spend your bankroll, but let's say I've got, you know, a single bullet in a 150 max, qualifier for the live finals, right? I want to just make a couple, maybe you're making a couple lineups, maybe you're making one lineup. I'm going to do one lineup for the sake of this year. And here I want to be really aggressive, right? It's a winner take all essentially. And I'm going to take a pretty aggressive stance. So I'm still going to build one lineup. I'm still going to have a pretty similar approach, but I want to be really aggressive. I want to do something. I'm going to basically try to take every ownership ledge, every ownership edge I can find here, and see how much leverage I can essentially pack into a single lineup while still not sacrificing too much value, right? So let's just go ahead and kind of start doing this. So first thing, I'm going to fade Cortez in this case. Right. Again, just a very popular play overall there. And let's go ahead and keep looking here. I want to play a highly correlated stack. Again, I'm going to skip the 3-3 stack there. So let's go ahead and zero out the 3-3 stack. So we have a 4-3 here now. I'm going to fade Robbie Ray too. I think that's an interesting fade on the slate here. Okay, so now all of a sudden we get to a lineup that I think is pretty interesting, right? We have this really contrarian approach to pitching, right? This is only our 31st. This is our 31st best lineup of 500, right? This is still a pretty high win equity lineup. We have a double stack of our two of our favorite lower owned stacks of Seattle and Baltimore. We do have the Boston one off in there. That's fine, but we play Quintana, a direct leverage against the Dodgers, who I think are going to be the most overowned stack in the slate. And John Gray, right? This kind of looks like something I would play in a larger field winner take all contest where I need to really just shoot for the moon. I'm not going to win this that often, but I think this is kind of a positive EV lineup, right? Maybe Quintana is a little bit too leveraged. Maybe I do a fade there. That's a really aggressive stance. And you can kind of keep going. I think this interesting lineup here, I don't know. Again, I just have a hard time embracing these three stack lineups. So maybe I go over here. And we get to another interesting one, right? Five stack of Baltimore, two Angels, direct leverage against Cortez chalk here. Abreu one-off, home run upside kind of guy, and then two lower owned pitchers. So again, I think this would be maybe as a secondary piece, another lineup that I'd be interested in going to. So that's kind of like what the process would look like. That was about a half hour here. We did a little bit of research. We familiarized ourselves with the slate. We built 150. Then we built a single entry lineup. Then we built a, you know, kind of a live final, highly leveraged qualifier kind of lineup. I feel pretty good about that. So yeah, let's go ahead and like look at some questions here. I see a few coming in here. Rogue said, does the projected score being 90 scare you off at all? I don't really ever almost look at this projected score, like almost ever, especially for this kind of satellite live final qualifier type build. you really need to shoot for the moon. So I would be playing pretty aggressively here. I wouldn't worry about this. Yeah, not a super big concern to me. I'm more interested in the Sabre score, right? I think the Sabre score does a better job of saying, you know, for the contest, how do these lineups rank, right? And I'm more than happy to play the lineup that is the 40th out of 500 on a live final qualifier, even if its projected score is really low. So, yeah, no problems there. HC said that looks like a live final winner for Jordan right there. Yeah, you know, the one problem with doing these streams where I actually show like these real lineups is it suddenly becomes kind of cursed if I don't play these. I wasn't planning on playing any live final qualifiers tonight here, but I don't know. Now do I have to? I don't know. It feels cursed. It feels like bad luck to not. But okay, walking backwards here a little bit. So from the start of the stream, Rogue said, when dialing in stack rules, is the only way to limit the stack to batting spots 1 through 6 doable in step one? How much value / hassle do you think that adds on? I think it adds a lot of hassle and doesn't add a lot of value. So you'd adjust your stack rules here in the rules tab, and you can adjust the batting order spots here. So, you know, if you wanted to go in and set your stacks, you could say, you know, only 7, 8, 9, right? The reason why I think that adds hassle, there's a couple reasons. So first of all, there's kind of two reasons that I find people do that. And the first is to capitalize on correlation and to play stacks where batters are more correlated to one another, right? Because they are closer together in the order. Two things on that. One, that's not as big of a factor as people think, right? The hitters in a given batting order are just like correlated well to the other hitters in the order, right? Like we can see here, you know, obviously Judge is more correlated to Rizzo and LeMahieu, the two guys next to him, than anybody else in the order, but it's not a huge difference as you get to some of these lower guys in the order, right? The main reason hitters in baseball are correlated is because when one guy gets on base, it stalls out now for the entire rest of the team. It prolongs the game. And especially at the high upside situations, right? Like when the Yankee stack goes off, it's because these guys are getting like 6 opportunities to come up to the plate and, you know, scoring runs and things like that, as opposed to that same play scoring traditional correlation that you would think about in something like football. So I don't think there's a huge value to that particularly. The second reason I think people do that is just because they don't want to stack the bottom of the order at all. And I think that's also overrated, right? You do have these guys at the bottom of the order, you know, on average are likely to be lower projected, mostly because they're likely to get, you know, in this case, about Joey Gallo has about one less plate appearance on average than LeMahieu, right? But we don't really care about averages for GPPs, right? We care about upside. And when you look at upside, there's really no material difference in the upside between these guys. 95th percentile for LeMahieu is 21 points. 95th percentile for Gallo is 21 points, right? When they hit their upside potential, it doesn't matter how many plate appearances they're getting on average. Because in an event-based sport like baseball, the upside can all come on one play. So I don't want to limit my stacks. I don't want to exclude, you know, some of these high upside guys at the bottom of the order here because they have that upside. Now, if you take a worse team, right, a team that, you know, isn't going to have as skilled of a bottom of the order, right, you may see a little bit more disparity here. But it's still not going to be that much. And I would say, you know, if you want to just fade certain plays because you don't like their upside period, I think that's fine, right? I wouldn't fade certain plays showing up in your stacks with a general heuristic or a rule of thumb, like the batting order, spots in your stack rules. I just don't think they add value for the two reasons that people do that. One is to, add value to correlation. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say about correlation. Now I remembered it. The other component is even if there was a big material difference between correlations of batters next to each other in the order versus further away in the order, that would naturally be accounted for in the correlation slider, right? So you would kind of naturally get that already. And it is, right? That like little difference in micro correlation between batters close to each other in the order is taken into account when the stacks get built to the extent at which that actually matters, right? So, but anyway, the reason why I don't think this adds a ton of value is because I think that the fundamental reasons why you would do it aren't really accurate. Players at the bottom of the order still have upside on most teams. And those correlations aren't as different as people think. But really good question. So, okay, Mark said, and this is the only other question I have in my queue. So fire away at me if you've got other questions for me real quick. But this is the last question I have in the queue. He said, hey, Jordan, I'm having trouble figuring out how to do only out players with late swaps since the UI changes, which are awesome. Can you go through that? Yeah, I certainly can. It's pretty, it's hidden, but it is in the contest tab here. So when you run a late swap build, right, either by clicking late swap in the entry editor or by toggling late swap on, it is moved to this contest tab. So you can see here down at the bottom, only swap lineups containing out players. If you toggle this on, in this case, late swap zero lineups, whoops, you can't see. Late swap zero lineups because the slate hasn't started. And none of my players are out. But that is where it is. So on that note, I would highly, let's fill these real quick here. Okay. I would highly recommend experimenting with the new quick swap tool as well. It's so nice, right? It is really amazing. Like, let's say, you know, we get a, I don't know which teams, let's pick somebody later in the slate. All of my favorite stacks that I have, all of the guys I have exposure to are early in the slate. That's okay. Let's do, let's say I take JP Crawford and he's suddenly not in the lineup. Or actually, you know what? Let's do Jesse Winker. Oh no, not in the lineup. This quick swap turns red. You have a player in your entries file that's not playing baseball that night. If you click this, so it will now, a few changes here, right? It'll now tell you who's out. It didn't do that before. That's really nice, knowing who's out. Simplifies things for you. But you can now do this best available from same team. And immediately, right, we just sub in all these other Mariners for Jesse Winker. So you still have this, you still have the stacks. Your stacks are intact. And it's really nice. And I think it's faster. And I think it might even be better than doing the full late swap in certain situations. If for some reason you couldn't get all of your Winker out, you could also then just do best available and swap out the rest of your Winker lineups with just the best available guy that fits in that spot. I haven't touched late swap since this came out for baseball. Because I just don't think you need to. Most of the time, it's enough to just preserve the stacks with the quick swap tool. So, okay. Uncle Luke says, what is the best way to get different in single entry, single game slates like game one of the NBA Finals? I seem to chop with so many people since it's gone from short slate to single game. Thanks. Yeah, so single entry. Interesting. Interesting little quirk added to this. I've talked a little bit about, you know, for larger field stuff, I've talked a lot about my favorite approaches to get different. I guess actually my approaches are probably still the same. In general, my favorite approaches to get different for NBA Showdown are differentiating at the captain spot, doing something unique that I think the field is unlikely to do at captain, and differing my construction. So probably still the same things for a single entry, but I just probably think there's maybe a little bit of a less need to be really aggressive with that. So let's build some single entry lineups here. I'm going to build 500, right? We'll use default settings. And I'll talk about this, right? For a single entry, you know, there's going to be a lot of people jamming a cash lineup in there. There's going to be a lot of people that aren't thinking about ownership at all and are just playing like some optimal or something like that. I think it's very easy. I think people, even in a single entry, will overvalue or undervalue, I guess, the probability of the less likely outcomes taking place, right? So I'll kind of just go in here, even without having to do a lot of research here, and just kind of limit test the builder and see what's possible. What constructions can I get away with here on this particular slate that might be unique? And remember, so we have a pool of 500 lineups here, right? Each of these lineups is optimal for a set of simulations of the way that game one can actually play out. So I don't really need to ask myself, is this a good lineup? SaberSim saying, here's 500 great lineups. You tell us which one you like the most, right? So it's kind of an important nuance there of like, this isn't so much, I can kind of just differentiate and limit test the pool and try to find a lineup that I think is going to be unique. So one thing I might do right off the bat, I don't even need to think too much about it, is fade the studs, right, at captain and try to just do something unique at captain. Al Horford captain, I mean, look at this leverage right off the bat. you're talking about a guy 2.65% owned at captain versus 25.88% owned at captain. You're immediately going to be pretty differentiated there, right? So taking a shot at captain. I might come over here as well and look at the lineup construction. These 3-3 stacks are, well, hold on. First of all, let me say this before I go much further. For a single bullet, that might be enough, right? Like, you might be differentiated enough in a single entry kind of contest just by playing somebody like Al Horford captain. I can't guarantee necessarily that you're going to get zero dupes by any means, but for a smaller field single entry GPP, that might be enough. If you want to go a little further, I think 3-3 stacks, especially in games with relatively tighter spreads like this one, are overrated. The field loves to play these balanced builds. I might fade a 3-3 stack. I kind of like this lineup too. Again, I think Draymond will be just unpopular enough at the captain spot that I think it's interesting here. What also is interesting is we're fading Tatum completely in this lineup. So I think another interesting thing to do is, you know, fade those studs at the captain spot, but also fade one, or even maybe not both, but fade one in the utility spot as well. I think that's interesting. Warriors are favored by a few points in this game. So I think it would be interesting to say, you know, what if we play, what if we fade Warriors stacks as a whole and play a lineup that's a little bit more overweight to the Celtics side and try to play an angle. So again, this kind of lineup looks interesting, right? We have no Curry here. We have no stud in the captain spot. We're playing a lineup where we're a little bit under, we're playing smart captain. We're playing a stack of the underdog team. A lineup like that, I think, kind of gets interesting. And we're only at lineup 26 of our pool of 500, right? Keep going here, right? So the challenge, right, the hand builder or the traditional optimizer player that's trying to build lineups for this slate, like the challenge that player faces is they are trying to use average projections and then do something unique or differentiate, right? But they don't know if those lineups are good that they're getting on the other side. Right. If they got this lineup, if that person arrived at this lineup, they would have to just kind of intuitively trust that it works. Right. They would have set a variety of different rules on their optimizer to force some diversity and force some uniqueness there. And what they would have arrived with at the other side is an optimizer still optimizing for average projection with a bunch of rules restricted on it so that it could not just print some random optimal, some random highly owned optimal. Right. In this case, again, we know that there's a simulation that supports this lineup. We can know that this lineup is a strong lineup because there's the sim that backs it up. So we can really, like, in the idea of how do I differentiate, right? Like, just do things, literally limit test your pool and do things that you think the field is unlikely to do, right? Do things that you don't even want to do. If you were playing especially like larger field stuff, trying to take down a big GPP, do things that feel kind of unnatural in your lineup construction because you know that it's backed up with a simulation, each one of these lineups. So I like this lineup. I liked a handful of the last couple ones we looked at. You could kind of keep going even more aggressive here, right? You could say, you know what? Let's get really weird and play a Boston 5 stack, right? Who's going to do that? And we're getting down here. We're at lineup 257 now, right? So now we're starting to take some pretty aggressive stances, but still a great lineup, right? This is you're starting to get to some lineups that are going to be pretty unpopular in smaller field single entry GPPs. So, but yeah, it's one of the more fun things to do on SaberSim, I think, is build some of these showdown lineups where you're focusing on differentiating, just because it's the hardest part about building lineups for showdown contests on other tools is coming up with all of the game scripts, coming up with like how can this game play out? What are the different, what is the range of outcomes of these different games? And then what does the optimal lineup look like when those game scripts come up? Right? That's hard. And you have this compounding assumptions there where like a human is going to be biased when they think about what are the different game scripts, right? You're already going to introduce bias right there. And then when you try to say, okay, this is probably what the optimal lineup looks like for that game script, you're going to introduce more bias on top of that bias. This is compounding assumptions is what I call it, right? That is what SaberSim was designed to do, right? We've simulated this game out already. We know what the outcomes look like. And it's trivial, essentially, to build the optimals for them because we have the sim outcomes. So the lineups are just optimals for sim outcomes. And your job is to, with SaberSim's support, essentially, figure out what are the best ones to play. You just have this huge advantage in doing that. So it makes it a fun problem to solve, but good question. So Mark had asked this question as a follow-up to the late swap thing. And I think I then proceeded to answer it, but I'll hit this real quick just in case I didn't. He said, do you like quick swap better than late swap for baseball season? I have been. Yeah. The main reason why, right? News breaks, guy's not in the lineup. That really only affects that particular player. That's basically it. It doesn't have a dramatic effect on the slate, right? It doesn't change the exposures I want to others, different players on the slate. It really just affects that guy. And in a sport where correlation is so high, I want to maintain that correlation and I want to put the next best available player from that same team in. So I don't need to rebuild everything. I maybe don't even want to rebuild everything because I spent time building my exposures out and doing all that stuff, right? So yeah, I think for baseball, my preferred way. So now we have a perfect example. How great is this? We can do this live. So I have two players, like, right? The Detroit lineup came out. I have two players in my lineups that aren't playing. What am I going to do? I will probably come in here and do quick swap best available from the same team first. And it looks like there's only like a single couple lineups here where this matters. So Daz Cameron moved from one lineup and it subbed in Derek Hill. Great. Baez can't be swapped out from 11 lineups. In this case, I would probably then just do the best available player. And I get to some exposure to some of these other teams, but that's okay. Don't need to be perfectly correlated across the board. Also, I probably don't have a lot of Detroit Tigers stacks anyway. It's probably a lot of Baez one-offs, so I'm still okay with this. But yeah, this is literally how I've been doing my swaps. And then I download and I upload to DraftKings. I haven't touched late swap since that feature came out. Mr. T asked the question about actual scores. We'll look into this here. He said, looking at past slates, hit or miss as to when actual scores are added. Is there a set time when it's updated? Thanks. Bonus question, is it better to be good at DFS or lucky? The actual scores thing, it depends a lot on our data provider. It's possible they're having issues today or have a little bit of a delay there. So no, there's not a set time. I would say roughly 24 hours after the slate finishes. Well, maybe after the slate starts is generally a good baseline of like it should be in by then. But no guarantees there. We're kind of at the whims of the provider there. So, yeah, better to be good at DFS or lucky. Oh man, I don't even know how to answer that question. It's better to be good, right? But you can run so hot that like, maybe it is better to be lucky. I don't know. Because you draw that 99th percentile ceiling out of the hat, and you're never going to hit that again, right? I don't know. That's such a big hit to your ROI here, or not even your ROI. That's such a big hit to like your actual realized profit, that you might as well take that. But there's a regression to the mean there as well, right? You have that big season, you keep playing DFS. That's you're going to give some of that back. So. Long term, I don't know, maybe a little both, but all right, cool. I don't see any other questions here today. I feel like I talked a lot on this one. I'm the only one talking on the show anyway, so I always kind of talk a lot, but I feel like in particular doing that like walkthrough of a build, maybe it was because I was like thinking, right? I was thinking live on stream of consciousness thinking. It's a little bit harder than what we normally do, but it was fun. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Let me know if that was interesting to you or helpful. I probably won't like blow anybody's mind that watches this show regularly, right? My process kind of remains my process. I do similar things every slate. So if you've seen other videos where I talk about my process, I imagine that wasn't that different, but kind of would have been I'm hoping it was a cool way to watch me engage with the slate for the very first time and actually like go through what I might be thinking about here on a particular slate. Let me know if you like that. Let me know if you want some more of that. We'll go ahead and wrap up the show here for today. I will remind everybody one more time, tomorrow or Friday, a little up in the air at the moment, I'll be having Eric on to talk a little bit contest selection. We've been doing some research. Eric's been doing some analysis of past contests. We want to make some updates and modernize, I guess, some of our contest selection recommendations here. So I'll be interviewing Eric, talking about those here before the end of the week. HC says that was cool. We should do it some more. That's great. I'd be happy to. I thought that was fun. So anyway, good luck on the main slate tonight. Oh God. There goes the background. You get to see the dirty living room in all of its glory. On that note, let's kill the stream. I will see you guys tomorrow. Take care.